Sudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Welcome. Hare Krishna. Today is a very special day in the Vaishnava calendar year. We are celebrating Govardhan Puja. And this is a very, very famous story going back in Vaishnava tradition, in Indian tradition in India. So that is the day we are honoring today. Technically it was Wednesday, but we're celebrating it together here today. So we're going to tell you the story about Govardhan Puja and its significance and what it means for us today. Try to make it contemporary and relevant for you. So a long, long time ago, Bhumi Devi became overburdened. Bhumi is Mother Earth, goddess of the earth. We all know that the earth is a goddess. She's feminine, don't we? Even today, we call her Mother Earth. So, going back in time, same. So, Bhumi at the time, Bhumi means earth in Sanskrit. She was overburdened by too many military forces, weapons, weaponry, corrupt leaders, kings, dictators, and such people. You'd think it was the current day, wouldn't you? But it wasn't. It was long ago. So sometimes Bhumi would take the form of a cow. Why would she take the form of a cow? Because a cow is a symbol of motherhood, divine mother. Earth is a symbol of motherhood. The cow is a symbol of motherhood. There are certain symbols that are reminiscent or recognized as symbols of motherhood. Those are two. And she went to see Lord Brahma. Brahma is the creator of all the diversity within the universe. Pretty important guy. He is often depicted with four heads, or heads looking in four directions. So he kind of has everything covered. And she went to see Brahma and she said, I am overburdened, I am heartbroken, I am heartsick. I can't go on like this supporting all of these negative energies on my planet. Please, please, let us approach Vishnu. Who's Vishnu? God, simply. Let us approach Vishnu, God, and please ask for some relief. How can we get relief? So Brahma said, yes, we shall go to the ocean of milk within the material universe, because there is a manifestation of Vishnu. Vishnu is God. How many manifestations does he have? How many fingers do you have? How high can you count? Thousands, millions, many. Let us go to the ocean of milk, Sveta Dweep, and see Vishnu about relieving the burden. Please come down to earth and relieve our burden. Okay, let's go. So off they went. Just the two of them? No, all the demigods came too. Who are the demigods? the celestials. They are the ones who run the universe. You might think of them as angels or archangels, important people, big job titles, CEOs, important people. They all went along too. I mean, going to see Vishnu. Let's go. Well, Brahma spoke to Vishnu in meditation, which is often the way that Vishnu communicates with Brahma. And Vishnu replied out loud, no, no. Does he just talk to anybody? Not always. He replied to Brahma within his heart, in meditation, as is often the case. He says, I understand the situation. It needs to be rectified. It needs to be remedied. You want me to take an incarnation? What do they call that in Sanskrit?
Avatar.
You want me to take an avatar and come down and appear? I will. I'll do that. Is there any water? Thanks. Sorry. He said, I will. But the thing about Vishnu, about God, we never know exactly when he's going to come or what form he's going to take. Not exactly. Thank you. Anyway, he said he'd come. So, this is the appearance of Krishna. And that's kind of what we are all here for, is for this personality named Krishna. When did he come? Very, very recently. Almost yesterday. Yesterday? Almost. 5,000 years ago? Like yesterday. In universal time? He was just here. You just missed him. He should have come yesterday. He was here. So Krishna came 5,000 years ago. He was born into a princely family, a Kshatriya family, a warrior family. Warrior means, do they make war? No, they are in charge of protection. They are in charge of the welfare and protection of the citizens, governmental affairs. That is Kshatriya family. So we learn from the Bhagavad Gita, spoken by Krishna some 5,000 years ago when he was here, Chaturvarnyam Maya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. He says, I created four orders in society according to what? Guna and karma, according to natural qualities, according to your qualities, your tendencies, your inclinations as people. That's guna and karma. Guna, karma, vibhagisha. Vibhagisha means divided into. Guna and karma. And karma means what? Your karmic reactions. Whatever you set into motion, whatever reaction you're going to get, this too will determine what kind of person you will be, how you fit in society, and what contribution you'll make, where you belong in society. So these four divisions of society exist throughout history in every society, in every country, in every culture, in every nation. And today, even still, today. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Brahmins are the intellectuals, the professionals, the priests, the doctors, the lawyers, the, you know, educated people, intelligentsia. Kshatriyas are the governmental people who protect the people, supposed to be, well, nowadays they've degenerated to politicians. before they were enlightened kings, but it slipped a little bit. That's what their job is. Vaishyas are farmers, agricultural people, business people, banking people. They generate what? Economy. Shudras are craftspeople, tradespeople, laborers, and that segment of society. Do we have all of these in society? Yes, we do. Which of these four categories can we do without? None. We need them all. This is how we function. Okay? So, even though Krishna took birth in a Kshatriya family, I'm not going to get into Krishna's whole story because we're going to focus on the Govardhan story today. But because they wanted to kill Krishna from the time he was born. Well, actually, before he was born. Because it was predicted that the eighth child, the eighth son of Devaki, would kill the wicked king Kamsa. So they had to, when Krishna was born in prison, where his parents were being held, they had to, by cover of night, so to speak, get Krishna out of that prison, and they took him far away, across the Yamuna River, into a community of Vaishyas. What did they do? They were cowherds. They protected the cows. Did they grow grain? Yeah, they grew some grain. They were agricultural, but really what they were was dairy farmers. That's what they were, primarily. Right? So, they were an agricultural community. Now, he went to live with Nanda Maharaj. Maharaj means king. So he was a very, very wealthy man. He was the king of all the cowherd people in that community called Vrindavan. Really, really beautiful place, I mean. Even nicer than Wicklow. Even if you can imagine. A little more sun in Vrindavan than in Wicklow. So his name was Nanda and his wife's name was Yashoda. And they became the foster parents of Krishna, and actually his older brother, Balaram. Balaram was 1 year older than Krishna. So the two of them were there, hiding out, because Kamsa was after them, was trying to find them and kill them off. Okay. So, back then, not like now, wealth was not measured in euros or paper money or euro coins or gold coins. Not in a Vaishya community. How do they measure wealth?
Number of cows.
You've read this story. I know you have. In number of cows. How many cows did Nanda Maharaj have? How many was he responsible for? 900,000 cows. That's a lot of cows. That is a lot of cows. And what do cows produce?
Milk.
And milk products. And yogurt. And cheese. And curd. And paneer. And
fuel and medicines.
And makkhan, butter. And fuel and medicines. And
that is from within the organism of each individual. It is necessary for self-sufficiency in medicine and supplies in order to survive in this totally onboard biochemistry. Disagree with that?
Okay. Well, it's a fact that you can use cow urine and cow stool to produce medicines. That's a fact, according to Ayurveda medicine.
I just haven't been treated with any medicine yet.
You don't get it here, typically.
I've sold medicine for 25 years and just Tibetan Tibetan, Western.
Okay. If you want to disagree, it's fine.
No, sir, I would like to know, I would like to speak with you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the question is after the class.
After the class. Because I got to keep with the flow here. Otherwise, I'll lose my spot. So, from the cow, we get many wonderful things. And that was the symbol of wealth. Also, grains, vegetables, and milk. That's the symbol of wealth. Why? Because you can eat them. That's why. It sustains life. You can have a stack of euros like this and eat to your heart's content. It will not work for you. So this is true wealth. And this is how the Vaishyas, the farmers, measured their wealth at that time. Now, what were the duties of the Vaishyas? Again, we turn to the Bhagavad Gita. It's in there. Krishigo rakshavani jam vaishya karma svabhavajam. Krishi go raksha vani jam. That's all he did. Essentially, it covers it all. Krishi means they would till the earth, right? And get grain and various kinds of crops. Is this not an agrarian country? Ireland, is that not what it's famous for? Is that not what it's noted for? Yes. Go Raksha. Now, this is a very interesting phrase, my friends. Go Raksha. What does go mean?
Cow.
Cow or cows. Raksha means what?
Protection.
Protection of cows. They didn't say the exploitation of cows. They don't mention the killing of cows. They don't mention the eating of cows. Because none of that went on. Why? Because you don't kill your mother. That's why. What happens if you kill your mother? What happens? You get a society like ours. That's what you get. All kinds of killing going on. Rampant. In this world, in our world. Because we've been killing the cow now in a very organized manner, in an industrial manner, for how long? Long time. And we're wondering, why do we have all these problems? How did they come about? Well, kill off the mother. See what happens. Test it out. See how long you'll get away with it. For every action, there is a reaction. Okay. Krishi go raksha vani jam. Vani jam means business, trade, mercantile business, and also banking. I remember I said that one time to one gentleman. Oh, he got so angry with me. He said there was never any banking back in those days. Sure, there was always banking. Was there not money lending? Did they not say, okay, I'll lend you this money and you can pay me back with a couple of sacks of grain extra or whatever? Yeah, of course. It was always there. So these were the duties of the Vaishya community, right? Okay. Now, in our current age, we don't protect the cow. We protect who instead of the cow? Dogs and cats. So our focus, our protection, our love has been shifted from the cow to the dogs and cats. Now, the dogs and cats also need protection. We know that. So no one's trying to say that they should not be taken care of. But the onus, the importance, has shifted from the cow to dogs and cats. Or the whales. We have to protect the whales. We have to protect the dolphins. Anything wrong with protecting whales and dolphins? No. But why not the cows? That's the part we are missing out on. Okay. There's actually a fifth segment of society that isn't officially listed. And these are the chandalas. And what does this amount to? In every society, no matter where you go, you have these four, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, which we mentioned. You will find that you yourself fit in to one of these classifications. And then we have people who need help. They need welfare, they need charity, they need assistance. Should they be given assistance as well? Yes. In an enlightened society, yes, absolutely. They need to be looked after. Sometimes people don't have a job. Sometimes they're looking for a job. Sometimes they've fallen on hard times. That's fine. What's a chandala? A chandala is somebody who can work but doesn't. That's how it applies in the modern context. I'm going to collect the dole. I'm healthy. I can work. But I don't want to. So I'll just collect the dole. And I'll live off society. That's chandala. That's the fifth classification. Okay. Now, it came that time of year, this time of year, harvest time. Now, throughout civilizations in many different places, they will do some sort of harvest ceremony. Thanksgiving, in America they do Thanksgiving. Something to recognize, and in the pagan system for years they would have done some kind of a harvest. I don't know the name of it. Do you? Solstice? Okay. Yeah, so that's a well-known ceremony or ritual or recognition that would have been performed for many societies. So Nanda Maharaj, the king, Indra's foster father, began to make preparations for a very, very elaborate sacrifice. And sacrifice, when we say sacrifice or ceremony, what we mean is that they would have a sacred fire, and they would offer objects into the fire, or they would just offer whatever they had to offer. They would make an offering to one of the gods. What gods? The demigods. Because demigod worship was very popular back in that time. And you can again look at various societies where demigod worship was carried out for hundreds of years, thousands of years. So we know this is historically a fact. So like every year, they were going to have, if you will, a harvest sacrifice, and they were going to make an offering to Indra. Indra is the god of rain. More importantly, he was chief among the gods. He was the head god, the head celestial, the head demigod. So every year they would make this elaborate sacrifice for him, and that would appease him. Prabhupada himself has mentioned that it is our duty as citizens to pay tribute to the demigods for their various services. Just as we pay taxes to the government for the various services that we receive from the government. I'm biting my tongue. I'll just leave it at that. And for some of the services we don't necessarily receive from the government and get taxed on. Okay, so it is justifiable if somebody does something for you to pay something in return, or simply to offer a tribute. Isn't that the proper mode of behavior? Some sort of recognition and display of gratitude. I think we can all agree on that. So Prabhupada himself said, yes, you would pay something to the demigods. However, you may say, well, wait a second, I was raised a Christian, I don't know anything about any demigods. That's fine, you don't have to worry about the demigods. You pay your tribute to God. You thank God himself. You show your gratitude to God. Is that enough? Absolutely. Because the demigods are a part of God. God is the whole. The demigods are a part. And the frequent symbol or metaphor that is used for this is to water the root of the tree. When you worship God, you are watering the root of the tree. All the branches and leaves will be satisfied. The gods will be satisfied. The ancestors will be satisfied. The people will be satisfied. Everybody will be satisfied by worshiping or paying tribute to God. Does it make sense? Sounds reasonable. Now, what do we notice in our modern day world? Here in Ireland, definitely, it is also a fact. People have stopped going where on Sundays?
Church.
Stop going to church. Now, this used to be one of the most Catholic countries. Well, ask the Irish. The most Catholic country of them all. Stop going to church on Sundays. Why did they stop going to church on Sundays? Different reasons. They've become disillusioned with the church, with the priesthood. They've become far more materialistic, chasing after material things, material dream. Different reasons, correct?
Yep.
So we stop going to church. What do we replace that with? Football? Sunday brunch?
Warfare.
A walk on the Wicklow Trail? What's it called? Wicklow Way?
Hangovers.
Hangovers? Can't go to church? Got a hangover? How's that working? What kind of shape are we in? It's not working out very well, is it? No, it isn't. Who's paying tribute to God? Who's giving thanks? Less and less and less people. Now, I'm not trying to get you people all to go back to church on Sunday. If you want to do that, that's your business. But we have to do something, my friends. You must acknowledge God. You must acknowledge the source of your gifts. The source of the bounty. Because if you don't, it will slowly but surely begin to dissipate and disappear. Any symptom of that happening? You joking me? Yeah, major symptoms. What do? Here we chant Hare Krishna. We'll talk about that in a minute. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, again, it says, Kamaistaistai Hritagyana Prapadyante Nyadevata. Krishna says there that if you worship the demigods, it's actually a symptom of being less intelligent. It's not the best place to put your focus. Because, why? Because usually people who focus on demigod worship are more materialistic in nature. It's God the order supplier. Well, God, okay, I need this, I need that. need one of those. My daughter needs this. My husband needs that. And could you give me this?
Yeah.
It's God the order supplier. Man proposes, God disposes. How often do you say to God, okay, God, what do you need? What would you like? What can I get for you? Isn't that a novel concept? That's what we need to do. It's called reciprocation. You want something? What are you doing? Don't just ask. Offer. That's what we're doing here. We're trying to offer. We're trying to give thanks. We're trying to recognize all the grace that comes down to us. When? At harvest time? No. All the time. Every day. Every day. Okay. So people have lost their faith and belief in religion in our modern day. So where has this faith and belief gone, you may say? Well, I mentioned materialism. Stuff, objects, designer names, labels, different things. And of course, we are now placing our faith and belief in science. We believe in science and scientists. But most of the scientists nowadays are atheists. They don't believe in God. They believe in science, in logic and rationale, and proof positive of how things go. So, if you place your faith in science and scientists, like any type of faith you may possess, it will be tested, my friends. Every kind of faith gets tested. If you think it's not going to get tested, then you don't understand how faith works. So there we are, you know. At the point of death. Stephen Hawking, oh my dear Stephen, please save me. Oh my dear Charles Darwin, please protect me so that I don't become the evolutionary missing link in my next life and take birth in the Galapagos Islands. Please, Darwin, save me. Is that what we're going to do at the point of death? Call on the scientists to save you? No. Because it won't happen. That's usually when the atheists become theists, right at that magical point where the soul's about to float out of the body. But don't take my word for it. Test it out when your time comes and see how that works. So no, we don't want to place our faith in scientists. We say, well, can't see God, can't prove that he exists, must not be there. God is everywhere. God is everywhere around you. You can see him. You can feel him. It's palpable. If you open your heart, it'll open your mind. And thereby, your eyes will begin to be opened. I can't even begin to imagine how anybody could look around themselves and not see God. You must be asleep, because it's everywhere. He's everywhere. Okay. Faith versus religion. You say, well, I belong to this religion and I believe that way. No, that's not religion, that's faith. Or you say, well, you know, I used to be a Buddhist and then I changed, I became a Jew. Or I used to be a Catholic and I became a Muslim. I changed my religion. No. You changed your faith. You changed your belief, not your religion. How can I say that? Because religion is not conceived by man. It is not set into motion by man. It is not manufactured by man. Religion is only set into motion by God. And religion is eternal. It doesn't take on various faiths and sects and beliefs and stripes and spots. No. Religion is eternal because God is eternal and everything to do with God is eternal. Sometimes people say, well, when did the Vedas begin? Well, the Vedas didn't begin. They always existed. They're eternal, like God. Oh, no, they must have had a starting point. No, actually, they didn't. And when Brahma was born, the creator, he looked around and all he saw was darkness. There was nothing. He didn't know who he was and what his purpose was. But he heard ta-ba. He heard two syllables, which means start your meditation. Start to do penance. So he began to meditate within himself, within his heart, for, by the way, a few thousand years. He wasn't in a hurry. There was nothing much else going on at the time. And within his heart, truth was revealed to him. Krishna revealed to him, God revealed to him what his purpose was, what his identity was, and what he was here to do. He revealed the Vedas to him. Veda means knowledge. It also means science. He revealed all the sciences to Brahma within his heart. And then Brahma began to create the diversity within the universe. And the sages, the wise beings within the universe, were also given the Vedas, and then they began to disseminate the knowledge of the Vedas through what method? The oral method, the spoken word. Correct? Back those days, people had brilliant minds. They all had a photographic memory, my friends. Can you imagine what that might be like? So they would sit on the banks of a holy river in India. They would listen to the Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken verse by verse, 7 days, and retain it all. No notes, no. No iPad, no laptop, no. No pencil, no paper. Just listening. Retain it all. But then we diminish, we dwindle over time in our abilities, and then what? It had to be written down at some point in time. So normally we say, just for reference, 3000 BCE. But not since last week. It all changed last week. Because the scientists studying the Harappan civilization in South India, southwestern India, where Hampi is, and that whole civilization, have now discovered through scientific means that that civilization actually dates back 6,000 BCE. So now I don't have to say 3,000 BCE anymore like I normally do. I'll just say 6,000 BCE. It goes back way before that, but you're going to have a frame of reference because people want proof. So it went from being disseminated through meditation then through the spoken word, and now the written word. Why? Because you can't remember. That's all. It's still there. It's intact. Okay, so religion is eternal. We call religion what? Dharma. Dharma means religion, purpose, principle, virtue, honesty, meaning, fundamental nature. All of this is Dharma, right? Dharma has so many meanings. And then we say Sanatan Dharma, eternal religion. What is the eternal religion? Is it Catholicism? No. Is it Hinduism? No. Is it Buddhism? No. What is it? It is serving. Serving God. That is Sanatan Dharma. Serving. Service. Do we serve? Do you go to work every day? And you serve your families by making money at work? And you look after your loved ones? And you serve other people while you're at work? And you serve your customers and your clients? And you serve your boss? And you serve? And that's what you do. All day long, every day. You say, I don't work. Well, then who do you serve? Well, I serve my mother and I serve my children. And okay, my husband. Fine. You serve. Well, what's the highest level of service? Serve whom? God. Now, there are many religious, spiritual methods or techniques by which one realizes God. I'm going to meditate on God, and when I become a realized soul, I'm going to stop meditating. Right? Or I'm going to do yoga, and when I realize God, I'm going to stop doing yoga. Or different methods. If you are serving God, consciously serving God, which is what we encourage you to do here, then once you realize God, then you stop serving God, right? Because you realize Him. No. You just keep on serving Him. Only directly instead of indirectly. So your activity doesn't change. Therefore, it is Sanatan Dharma, eternal religion. Okay? So, when we chant Hare Krishna, what is it? It's a transcendental sound vibration. Is it just a sound? No. It's transcendental. It comes from the Sanskrit language. What does it do? It actually transforms the being. It transforms the mind. It transforms the person. What does it do? It cleanses the mirror of the mind. The mind is dusty because it has been relating to identifying with the material energy for who knows how long. And when you cleanse the mirror of the mind, then you can begin to reflect spirit. Right now, many of us are reflecting matter. We're reflecting this lower energy in which we find ourselves, down here, material world. By chanting the names of God, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
It cleanses the mirror of the mind because you are directly associating with God, with Spirit. And that is purifying. So it's not just one of the techniques that you can use. It's direct association, whether you realize it or not. Okay. Now, as far as Govardhan Puja is concerned, Krishna appeared, and Krishna told Nanda Maharaj, do not do the ceremony of Indra's yajna, Indra's sacrifice, but instead, let us do a ceremony to please the Brahmins and the cows and Govardhan Hill. Why Govardhan Hill? Govardhan Hill was the hill on which the cows would graze. Now, it's important to understand that God is unlimited and can do anything that he wants to do. So he can take any form he wishes. Because we cannot see God, because we are not purified enough, and we can't see God directly, God will take different forms in terms of the deity or the likeness, the similarity in likeness of God or incarnations of God, so we can worship God. But God can take a form in wood, in stone, in marble, in brass, anything. God takes the form of Shalagram Shila. You have a Shila here, don't you? Govardhan Shila. Shila means a stone, but a sacred stone into which the energy of God has entered. In India, this is very common. So God will agree to take or enter into certain forms. In the same manner, he entered into Govardhan Hill. So the worship of Govardhan Hill was non-different than the worship of Krishna. So he said to Nanda, his stepfather, we're not going to do this puja on behalf of Indra. And his father said, Indra's going to be very upset if we don't do the traditional puja. He says, don't worry about that. I'll take care of it. This is a little 7-year-old boy. Krishna's 7. But by this time, he had done so many amazing things that everybody was sitting there scratching their heads. Who is this guy? Who is he? He's so beautiful. He's so attractive. The entire community of Vrindavan was mesmerized by his every word, his every movement. Every little thing he did was absolutely mesmerizing, all attractive, and no one could get enough. Everybody loved Krishna. So he was saying, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do the Govardhan Puja. Puja means worship. It means worship. Okay, so even though Krishna was God, Prabhupada says, only maybe a handful of people actually realized that Krishna was God on earth. It's not like everybody recognizes God when God appears. Even if you, you know, read the stories of Jesus Christ, you'll get the same thing, you know. Not everybody figured it out. So Prabhupada says a handful of people, 100 to 200 people, he says on the recording. 100 or 200 only. Which is not very many. So Indra and even Brahma himself, who went to see Vishnu, they did not know exactly the form that Vishnu would come in when he agreed to come to lift the burden of the earth. But they began to hear about this little cowherd boy, Krishna. Now Indra, in his mind, Indra the king of gods, God is not going to be some cowherd boy running around in the fields and forests of Vrindavan you know, chasing the calves and the cows. Nah, nah, that God wouldn't do that. He'd be far more important position. Something with status, something with clout. He wouldn't be doing that. Running around with a flute? What, are you kidding me? Nah. So Indra thought, no, that's not him. Brahma thought, no, no, that couldn't be him. I wonder where he is. Wonder who he is, because we know he's here somewhere. Couldn't be that guy who's happened to kill all these terrible demons that were sent to kill him by the wicked King Kansa. No, that's not him. So, Krishna, being God, is omniscient. He knows everything. What are the six opulences of God, of the Godhead? Aishvaryasya samagrasya, viryasya yashasa shriya, jnana vairagya yoschapi shanang bhaga itingana. Vishnu Puran. So out of those six main opulences, two of them are jnana, knowledge or vision, he sees everything, and virya, strength. Bravery. Well, virya is actually strength, but yeah, bravery. It's not technically one of them, but we'll throw that in. Why not? So he knew what Indra was thinking. Sometimes people in positions of power and authority, self-important, they become what? Vain, puffed up, arrogant. Do you know who I am? You must not know who I am and how important I really am. This is what all the developers and the bankers are saying. You see them all say that? Do you know who we are? How important we were? And of course, we know who they all are now, but they're not so important anymore. Because the high fall from a high position. So, not much different than that. So Indra was very self-important. How dare these coward men not do my sacrifice? I'll fix them. So Indra brought the clouds. He brought the Samvartaka cloud, which is the cloud that you use when you're going to annihilate the entire universe. You know the old Noah's Ark, the old flood thing? That's a Samvartaka cloud. Bring that one. We're going to inundate everything with water. Storm and pelting. Pillars of water. It says, pillars of water were coming down. Can you imagine? You like that one?
I do, yeah. Cool.
Cool. So pillars of water were coming down and the people were sorely afflicted. And it was too much. It was coming down and coming down day and night. So what did Krishna do? Of course, Krishna knew this was going to happen. He said, don't worry. I'm going to help you. Nothing to worry about. Here's a 7-year-old boy. He reaches under Govardhan Hill and he picks it up on the little finger of his left hand. And he holds it up. It's 5 to 6 miles in diameter. And he holds it up like a umbrella, like a mushroom, like an umbrella. Holds it up like an elephant picks up a lotus flower. And he holds it up for 7 days and 7 nights. And all the coward men are scurrying around underneath with their big long sticks. Trying to put this, can't give him a hand, just in case he drops it. Like your stick is going to hold it up. Huge Govardhan Hill. And everybody huddled underneath. Where they sang and they danced and they told of Krishna's pastimes and they ate and they slept and it was dry underneath. Everything else was devastated. Or as you say here in Ireland, it was a soft day. And after 7 days, Indra said, who is this guy? How can he do this? Who is this? And then he realized, that's him. That is the incarnation of Vishnu. I mistook him for a 7-year-old boy that I was going to annihilate. Oh, okay. And I feel very regretful and highly embarrassed at this point in time. And so you should, Indra. And so you should. So Indra became very remorseful. And he came and he offered his prayers. He bowed down at Krishna's feet. He asked for forgiveness. And Krishna forgave him completely. He said, from now on, don't be so proud of your position, because your position doesn't amount to that much, especially if you have all your pride invested in it. So, that's the story of Govardhan here. So, what was the purpose? What is the purpose of Govardhan Puja? Number one, to give thanks to God for the bountiful harvest. What harvest? I don't care. Everything. Your bounty, my friends. And for the feast that will be offered to Krishna, and that we will be, that will be the remnants of which will be shared with us. To give thanks for absolutely everything, which is what we are not doing in this country Sunday mornings anymore. You don't need to do it Sunday morning. You just do it every day. You could do it at home as well. Number two, to demonstrate the inconceivable energy or mysticism of Krishna, who is known as Yogeshwara, master of mysticism. She's like two steps ahead of me the whole time. She's like taking the words out of my mouth. You're absolutely right. God can take any form, animate or inanimate, right? He can enter into any object, wood, stone, metal. I said this. Govardhan Hill. And remember that when God comes down, he brings with him what?
Associates.
All of his associates, his paraphernalia, his pastimes, everything goes with him. So Govardhan Hill is also a manifestation, in that sense, of Mount Meru. Meru is the sacred mystical mountain upon which all the planetary systems exist in the universe. So that is a symbol of his Meru. Number three, to demonstrate the inconceivable power of Krishna, he, as a 7-year-old boy, he lifted this hill with the little finger of his left hand. And number four, to teach Indra, the king of gods, a lesson in humility, to show him that a mere hill was more worshipable than Indra himself, and that God was more powerful than Indra. So this is what we're doing here today. And do we want to do questions or? Thank you for your time and your kind attention. Hari Bol. Any questions? I understand we have a very wonderful program lined up today, Maheshwara.
Yes. So,